Mornings and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS News World News Roundup, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. President-elect Donald Trump is raising eyebrows with his selection to head the military. He's chosen Fox News host and Army veteran Pete Hegseth to be the nation's next defense secretary. CBS News military consultant Jeff McCausland.
Many people thought the most likely candidate to be Secretary of Defense might have been Mike Pompeo. The fact that he didn't select Pompeo, but selected somebody with a pretty thin resume in national security affairs tells me that the primary reason is one of great political loyalty.
Mr. Trump's tapped Elon Musk and former GOP presidential contender Vivek Ramaswamy to lead DOGE, a new Department of Government Efficiency. Mr. Trump will travel to the White House today to meet with President Biden, spokeswoman Karine Jean-Pierre.
It is important not just because it's important to him, but it's important to the American people. He said the American people deserve this. They deserve a peaceful transfer of power. They deserve a smooth transition.
Melania Trump will not join her husband. The 22-year-old Air National Guardsman who leaked classified military documents online apologized in a Boston courtroom before he was sentenced to 15 years in prison. U.S. Attorney Joshua Levy.
Jack DeShera made the deliberate choice, day after day, week after week, for over a year, to share the nation's secrets that were entrusted to him and make them available to all comers.
Two people were killed when an old food coloring factory blew up in Louisville, Kentucky. Others were hurt. One person was trapped. Rescued by first responders. City's fire chief, Brian O'Neill.
We started air monitoring immediately. It is ongoing. We're going in all directions within that whole area. And rest assured that nothing at this point has ever shown any type of chemical problems in the air in this entire region.
The cause of the explosion is under investigation. Firefighters are having a tough time getting a handle on the wildfire that broke out along the New York-New Jersey border over the weekend. CBS New York's Christine Sloan is in Passaic County.
Officials say they've made progress, but the winds are hampering their efforts to completely bring this fire under control. Those winds also pushing the smoke into New Jersey, where the fire is 10% contained after burning nearly 25 acres of land.
There's a new hot guy in town.
This year's People's Sexiest Man Alive is John Krasinski.
Stephen Colbert with the announcement on The Late Show. The Jack Ryan star says his wife, Emily Blunt, wasn't impressed.
There was so much laughter on the other end of the phone.
S&P futures down 15. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Seth here, host of Over the Back Fence. We're on the air live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., taking your calls to buy or sell, talk local events, or whatever, only on WFHR.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Beyonce might have been disappointed with her response from the Country Music Awards, but when it comes to Grammy nominations, she's at the top. Variety reports that Beyonce has been nominated for 11 Grammys, including Artist, Song, and Album of the Year for Cowboy Carter. Not far behind are some other heavy hitters, including, you guessed it, Taylor Swift, Sabrina Carpenter, Billie Eilish, and new kid on the block, Chappell Roan. Roan and Carpenter also up for Best New Artist of the Year. Looks like I got shut out again. Taylor Sheridan apparently decided he does not have enough shows on TV, so he is teaming up with Blake Shelton for a new music reality show. The Road will follow a big-time music star around the country in search of the next big musical talent. Deadline reports competing artists will have the opportunity to open for an A-lister in various towns to win over crowds. The music superstar who will lead the search has not yet been revealed. The Road will launch in the fall of 2025 on CBS. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Bucks take down the Raptors. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NBA, Milwaukee with a 99-85 win over the struggling Raptors. Giannis with 23 points. Bobby Portis, 17. No Damian Lillard in the concussion protocol. So point guard Ryan Rollins stepped in with 12 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. Doc Rivers.
He's a terrific shooter. The thing I kept saying in the timeout, keep shooting, keep shooting.
The Bucks host the Pistons tonight. NFL, the Packers getting ready to play the Bears Sunday at Soldier Field. Green Bay has a 10-game winning winning streak over Chicago, the longest of its kind in the league. Men's college basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers will welcome back Bo Ryan and the 2014-15 teams that he led to the Final Four when they play number 9th ranked Arizona at the Kohl Center Friday night.
Excited to have who's coming back from those two teams, and then to have an opportunity to recognize Coach Ryan, put his name in the rafters where it belongs. So preparation for Arizona will unfold.
That's Badgers head coach Greg Gard with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Cloudy today with a high in the upper 40s this afternoon. The wind will be out of the southeast at around 10 to 20. Showers tonight, maybe about a tenth to two-tenths of an inch by the time it winds down. 40 the low. Tomorrow will stay cloudy with a high of 51. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 35.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next.
This is locally grown radio, WHR.
to laugh, and when the sun is out, I've got something I can laugh about. I feel good in a special way. I'm in love and it's a sunny day.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
We take a walk, the sun is shining down, burns my feet as they touch the ground. A shady tree. I love her and she's loving me. She feels good, she knows she's looking fine. I'm so proud to know that she is mine.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back. Civic Media Mornings. My name is Greg Bach. We are sitting in for Pat Kreitlow, who is on vacation right now. Had a bit of technical difficulties this morning. We welcome you here, and we welcome back Matt Rothschild. Matt, can you hear me?
I can, Greg.
There you go.
And so I want to apologize to the listeners for this technical difficulty and welcome you back to Civic Media Mornings.
All right. Just to let you know, Matt, we've got Harvey K on the phone for you. So we're ready to do that if you'd like.
Sure.
Let's
get Harvey K on there. Harvey K is a professor of democracy and justice studies at UW Green Bay. If he's still teaching there, I got to ask him about that. He's the author of some great books, including The American Radical, Are We Good Citizens?, Thomas Paine and the Promise of America, and The Fight for the Four Freedoms, What Made FDR and the Greatest Generation Truly Great. Harvey K., welcome to the show.
Thank you. I was expecting a totally different technology, but if you can hear me, so much the better. And the only thing I would correct is that I'm Professor Emeritus. When the pandemic struck, I decided that as much as I like doing things in groups online and shows online, I did not want to be lecturing to 50 to 150 students online. So I took a retirement. So that's 4 years ago.
There you go. You enjoying your retirement?
Yeah. The first couple of years were incredibly busy doing, it seemed like I was doing somebody's podcast show almost every single day. That's quieted down, but I've actually developed a new thing this past year. I was on a show with cartoonist or comic book creator Matt Strackbine, a.k.a. The Letter Hack, who lives down in South Carolina. And he was talking to me about a variety of the books that I had written. And he said, you know, it would be fun if we could take some of your stuff and turn them into comics. So we've actually produced a series of comic strips that we've posted at Common Dreams. And if anyone gets a chance, just go to commondreams.org. Type in Harvey J.K. and you'll see a bunch of articles and comic strips come up, one of which actually deals with the kinds of things we might be getting to today, the question of an economic bill of rights and what would FDR do in the face of the threat of fascism, or what did he do in the face of the threat of fascism. So this past year, I've been busy thinking about turning my arguments into visual images, I guess.
Well, that's great to be able to repurpose your stuff. I'm all for that. Well, why don't we pick the conversation up where you put it on the table, which is, how did FDR combat fascism?
Well, it was pretty clear. I mean, first of all, we should remember the dates. He was governor of New York in the late 1920s into the very early 1930s, and he was always eager for a chance to run for president, which seemed not likely once he had been stricken with polio, but he was still determined that he was going to transcend the wheelchair in many ways. In 1930, he wrote to a friend who was the leading figure on questions of social welfare in America, and he said, "I think it's time for this country to go radical, or fairly radical, for at least a generation." What led him to say that? Well, it was the fact that fascism had triumphed in Italy with Mussolini, and he imagined other parts of Europe were going to be threatened by a similar kind of authoritarianism, as well as the fact that, in his mind, Soviet communism was clearly authoritarian, would later be called totalitarian, and he thought it was imperative that the United that Americans recall and remember what it was that saved the American promise historically, which to his mind was Americans had gone radical. They turned a rebellion, with the words of Thomas Paine, during the 1770s into a revolution for independence and the making of a democratic republic. In the 1860s, led by Lincoln, they not only fought a civil war, but in the course of doing so, brought an end to slavery. And as a consequence, the American promise was renewed. Whatever happened thereafter was not Lincoln's fault. And then, in Roosevelt's mind, if the United States is in the midst of a Great Depression and fascism was a possibility, in fact, there were leading figures who acted, including the editors of Vanity Fair magazine, who wondered if we needed a Mussolini to get us out of the Great Depression. But FDR utterly rejected that and knew that the only way you can save democracy is by radically enhancing it. So in 1932, when he ran for president, he laid out a series of initiatives that would both tap the working abilities of the masses of unemployed, but also empower them with such things as Social Security, and empower them with the right to organize labor, that kind of thing. And when he became president, we all know that he instituted, with the Democratic Congress and the support of working people, a New Deal, as he called it. And as a consequence, the prospects of fascism did not only seriously decline, however much others might have said, well, FDR is acting like a fascist, you know, the far right was accusing him of that. The fact is that he saved democracy with the labor movement by radically enhancing American democratic life. And I could lay out examples. For example, he indeed signed into law the National Labor Relations Act, which empowered the creation of a National Labor Relations Board, whose job was not to mediate between labor and capital, but to stand behind labor as it sought to organize workplaces. He did sign into law something he had fought up for quite a time, the Social Security Act, which enabled...
Hey, Harvey, we got to take a break. Please stand by and join us right after this break, and we'll continue how we radically enhance democracy and beat fascism. You're listening to the Civic Media Mornings. I'm Matt Rothschild. At Kreitler, we'll be back.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for the Todd Allball Show.
It's time for cards, cards, cards. Make your holiday cards stand out from the rest this year with Quality Plus Printing. Create funny, sincere, or photo-based messages for every occasion with Quality Plus Printing for all your cards, cards, cards.
Join our advertising family on WFHR and WIRI and see how radio can help improve awareness, revenue, and staffing for your business. I'm Ashley, and it's my mission to help our area businesses thrive. Call me today, 715-496-0710.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute and an answer to the question, how often should I take my car in to get it serviced? As somebody who's worked on cars and knows a little bit about them, I admit that my instincts here are 100% wrong. I always want to say, oh, I'll just know when it's time. I'll feel it. But that's pretty hard to make a plan or a budget around. And my husband has made an honest car owner out of me by scheduling our maintenance on the calendar according to the book that everybody has and nobody reads, the manual in your glove compartment. Yep, even the motorheads over at cartalk.com. Remember that old Car Talk radio show that was one of my favorites, you know, with Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers? They say that taking your car in on the schedule dictated by the people who made it is the best way to keep it in shape. So grab that manual. And if you want more tips on saving, head over to workmoney.org. Till next time, I'm Carrie Joy saying take good care.
We are the boy band. Your tween made you see. We
are the boy band.
It's painful concert number three.
We are the boy band. We're 5 and 19.
We are the boy band.
Always singing on key.
You love your kids enough to take them to see their favorite band. Love them enough to make sure they're buckled up in the back seat. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Welcome back to Civic Media Mornings. I'm Matt Rothschild, your guest host for today and tomorrow, because Pat Kreitlow's off this week. We'll be back Monday with his Up North News Radio. I'm happy to have Harvey Kay hanging around this morning. He is the Emeritus Professor of Democracy and Justice Studies up at UW-Green Bay, author of some incredible works, including Thomas Paine and the Promise of America and the Fight for the Four Freedoms, what made FDR in the Greatest Generation truly great. Harvey, I have a question for you. I mean, you talked about people during FDR's day saying we needed our own Mussolini, and it looks like we have our own Mussolini today. I used to call him Trumpolini, and it's just not funny anymore.
No, right? No. That was a nervous laughter on my part.
Yeah. What did you make of his victory?
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. In 2016, I lied to a lot of people to reassure them and said that he would not win. This time, when people asked, I said, I have no idea, really no idea. Because, first of all, the Democrats waited too long to push Biden to not declare his campaign, okay? Number one. Number two, the campaign that Kamala Harris was running, whatever the vibes, as they, you know, asserted, the fact was that she just was not reaching the kinds of working people that she really needed to appeal to. And it didn't help that when she came to places like Wisconsin, she was accompanied by Liz Cheney. In the short term, I really did think the Democrats could lose, in good part because they had waited too long to find themselves a new candidate. And when they did find the new candidate, however exciting it seemed at the Democratic convention, they came out of the convention and basically took the same kind of road they had taken before, a kind of centrist road. And one would have hoped that they would have learned from Bernie and Trump, if one recalls what Trump did back in 2016, say, that if you're going to win in America, you've got to not simply tap in to people's, if you like, needs and desires. You've got to point out to them what it is that's oppressing them, what it is that's keeping their wages low. You point a finger, as Bernie did, at the billionaires. And when Kamala took to the road, she basically followed the advice of her brother-in-law, who was an attorney for Uber, and basically, you know, did what Biden did. He said, things aren't going to fundamentally change. You know, they offered some policies, but some of the policies were absolutely schizophrenic. So that was a terrible campaign ultimately. So I really did worry. And of course, Trump won. In the larger historical perspective, the Democratic Party has failed the very folks that empowered FDR back in the 1930s. The FDR presidency, which lasted 12 years. I mean, he was elected to office four times. He passed away early in his fourth term. Really did depend on an intimate tie to labor, okay? And what we've seen now for 50 years, or we have had seen for 50 years, is not simply a class war by the corporate rich, conservatives, and neoliberals. And neoliberals often refers to Democrats.
Bill Clinton, for instance, and NAFTA.
Right. Carter, Clinton, and actually Obama as well. Okay. Neoliberalism prevailed in the White House. And it really was the case. Became very evident under Carter and especially under Clinton that the Democrats were turning their backs on the labor movement. And I could detail that, but probably don't need to. I think a lot of people know about what I know about it. But the thing is that 50 years of neoliberal politics, Republican or Democratic, has seen the working people in this country not secure a significant rise in their incomes in 50 years. The first 50 years are basically, it was a class war. And moreover, it was a class war directed against the very democratic achievements that workers, women, and people of color had secured between the 1930s and the 1960s. So it was a war on a whole generation's achievements. And the Democrats, for the past 50 years, had turned their backs on fighting that class war and embracing, you know, the politics and economics of neoliberalism. So, you know, I guess I'm not surprised. I'm devastated, you know, in many emotionally and intellectually, but I'm not actually shocked by what happened.
No, and you mentioned the Liz Cheney gambit, and you know, my son who's 35 and working at a co-op here said, "Wow, what are they doing to Liz Cheney? They're just going to turn a whole bunch of people off." And Dick Cheney, I mean, no one at the base, progressive base, is going to get excited about that. The theory was that Liz Cheney was going to bring moderate Republican women or independent women over to Kamala Harris, but I don't know that there's any evidence that that happened. In the meantime, they turned off young people.
And at least this morning, I saw a piece by John Nichols quickly online in which he says that in the places that Liz Cheney visited with Harris took Cheney along, it actually cost her votes among some of the very people that they really needed to appeal to, who were not necessarily Republicans, but who are independents. I mean, basically, independents are numerous, right? So, yeah, no, I mean, you know, this is interesting to me. I've said this many times in many ways, but I've really come to believe that basically the political elites in this country and the Democratic elites at our expense have come to believe that working people have no memory, that they just don't have a memory. They completely fail to consider that the consequences of neoliberalism, working people had to live with and have had to live with every single day. They've seen communities in decline. They've seen their wages and incomes, you know, go down or at least not keep pace. So basically, even if they couldn't give us the political history of the kinds of things I'm talking about, it is the case that they did not forget that when Hillary Clinton ran for president, she was a Clinton. And Clinton had basically screwed them in the 90s. Okay. And similarly, Biden, they may not know the details, but Biden was a leading neoliberal in the U.S. Senate. So expectations on my part, at least, were low. And rather surprisingly, he did more than I would ever have expected.
Harvey, I hope you'll stay with me for the last segment we have at the end of the next half hour. I've got a guest coming on at the break here, but I'd love to carry on the conversation if we could. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in here for Pat Kreitlow, who's off this week. We'll be back on Monday. I hope you'll be back in just a minute.
Water make the river, river wash the mountain. Fire make the sunlight turn the world around. Heart is of the river, body is the mountain. Spirit is the sunlight turn the world around. We are of the spirit, truly of the spirit. Only can the spirit turn the world around. We are of the spirit, truly of the spirit.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids' home of Nightlight with Peach Schwabe.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm Stephanie Hoff for the Midwest Farm Report, along with you on a Wednesday, reporting from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. As winter approaches, Wisconsin farmers are preparing for a season of uncertainty. Fluctuating weather patterns are in the forecast, but growers can expect a wet winter. We've got a state climatologist joining us in just a moment.
With over 60 years of experience in the auction business, Steffes Group is the trusted source for buying high-quality equipment. From farm and construction equipment to transportation and land, Steffes Group auctions feature a diverse selection of assets for whatever your needs may be. Bid with confidence, knowing that Steffes Group's team of professionals prioritize honesty, integrity, and outstanding service. Visit steffesgroup.com to view their upcoming auctions and start bidding on the equipment you need today.
State climatologist Steve Vavris joins us. He says this winter will likely be wetter than normal. He hasn't quite been able to nail down the temperature expectations.
The latest forecast or outlook is showing from NOAA, National Weather Service, is no real indication in terms of temperature, whether it will be unusually warm or unusually cold. They're saying equal chances of a warm, cold, or near normal winter. So that doesn't give us much to go by. On the other hand, it is indicating that for the Great Lakes states, including Wisconsin, that chances are elevated for a wet winter. And that's especially true in the eastern half of Wisconsin. That could mean more snow. It could mean more rain. It could mean more rain and snow. It just depends on what the temperatures are like coming up.
Steve Vavris, along with us, Wisconsin's state climatologist. I've got more agribusiness news coming your way.
At CHS, we know what it takes to feed and fuel the world, to integrate a global ag and energy supply chain, to advocate for farmers in their fields and around the world, to build communities, invest in rural America, and empower rural economies. It takes courage, conviction, commitment. It takes the nation's leading farmer-owned cooperative. It takes a co-op. It takes CHS.
Here's what's happening in agribusiness news on a Wednesday. Wisconsin is getting more than $3.5 million from the U.S. Department of Agriculture to strengthen fertilizer production. Bentley Farms in Shawano County is a recipient. They'll be using the money to implement a nutrient concentration system. This will transform manure waste into organic fertilizer. Once operational, the system is projected to make nearly 40 million gallons of organic fertilizer annually. From the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Cloudy today with a high in the upper 40s this afternoon. The wind will be out of the southeast at around 10 to 20. Showers tonight, maybe about a tenth to two-tenths of an inch by the time it winds down. 40 the low. Tomorrow will stay cloudy with a high of 51. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 35.
The Badgers.
Feeds Max, fakes the three, takes the three, left side, yes sir.
Fleet.
Pivots, fades, flips, good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up, got it, with the right hand, it counts and a foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric, and Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM WFHR, streaming live on the Civic Media app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Maggie Dawn.
Next, I'm going to talk about the new information environment. Elon Musk controls all the info. What does that mean? We discuss.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
Good morning. Matt Rothschild here, pitching in for Pat Kreitlow, who's off this week. He's on vacation. He'll be back on Monday with his Up North News Radio. Welcome to the Civic Media Mornings. Matt Rothschild, former editor of the Progressive Magazine, and I used to be over at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, too. Now I'm delighted to have with us, joining the conversation, Angela Stroud, winner of the 73rd Assembly seat way up in the northwest corner of Wisconsin, containing Superior, Bayfield, Washburn, and Ashland. Angela Stroud, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, congratulations on your win. That must have been thrilling.
It was very exciting. A rough night for Democrats. So it was a mixed bag for sure. But I'm, you know, a week later now, I'm kind of dealt with the emotions, and I am super excited to get to work.
Well, deal with those emotions a little more, the fact that Trump won again. I know I've had a hard time wrestling with it. How do you come to terms with it?
You know, after some time thinking about what went right and what went wrong in this campaign, I think we continue as a national party to kind of struggle with a consistent, clear economic message. And it sounds like, you know, from the analysis I'm hearing and just my own observation of the campaign, I think that's the most sort of compelling explanation for what went wrong. And, you know, the thing about Trump is he doesn't have to offer an alternative set of policies. He sort of embodies to many people this idea of the non-elite, which is ironic, of course. But that's the role he's played since he came on the scene in 2016. Unfortunately, he just happened to be on the ticket at a time when voters just didn't resonate with what was being offered on the Democratic side.
Yeah, I think people are just sick of politics as usual and politicians as usual. That's why Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump have been two of the most popular political figures over the last 10 years. And, you know, I felt bad for Kamala Harris because I thought she, you know, she worked her tail off and, you know, did great in the debate. Yes, yeah, she had some tactical errors and some substantive errors, as Harvey Kay was talking about, in a similar way that you are now, not addressing the real economic circumstances of people as fully as she might have. You know, she had some breaks for Wall Street in there at the same time that she was, you know, talking about, you know, building housing for people and lowering the cost of groceries and rent, which was nice to hear. But the other side of it was kind of odd and peculiar. And so I do think there was some cognitive dissonance there. I had fooled myself that she might win. And, you know, while I wasn't surprised, it was just a devastating blow. And so we do need to recover. But one of the bright spots was your win up there, because Democrats and progressives had been unrepresented in the Bayfield, Washburn, Ashland area, because of the rigged maps. And now we got fairer maps, and lo and behold, you won. To what extent did the fair maps movement help pave the way for your victory?
I mean, there's no doubt I wouldn't be in the seat today if it wasn't for the fair maps. But, you know, prior to 2022, we had two assembly reps up here because of how the districts were drawn, who were Democrats. Superior was the most gerrymandered district in the entire state. And so we kind of traded a 2-for-1 in these maps. On the one hand, you know, we picked up one, but on the other hand, this is a bluer area than a lot of people realize. And right. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the shape of this district, Superior to Bad River. It's almost the entire south shore of Lake Superior in the state. And that matters because that allows us to really think about what it means to be the Lake Superior district, protecting the lake being the number one issue that people up here talk about. And so, I'm, you know, on the one hand, I'm bummed that we have one fewer rep than we've had historically up here. And on the other, the shape of this district is really meaningful, and it's going to allow us to be, I think, more proactive in protecting the lake than we've been able to be in the past.
Speaking with Angela Stroud, newly elected to the 73rd Assembly seat. Yeah, I saw on your website that protecting the Lake Superior watershed was one of your top issues. What needs to be done to protect the watershed there?
There are a range of things. I mean, we need to think about the toxins that are getting into the lake, PFAS being, you know, top of mind for a lot of people, but other toxins too. And we need to think about how are they getting in and then regulating them. I mean, when you sit on the shores of 10% of the world's fresh water, you have to take that responsibility seriously. And then we also have, you know, petroleum infrastructure along the lake shore that we need to be thoughtful about. And, you know, are those projects worth the risk to our clean water? So we have NTEC and Superior, Line 5 out in Bad River. Well, Line 5 runs from Superior all the way to Bad River, to be clear. But it's been a legal battle in Bad River. And so those are a few that come to mind. But any threats to the watershed, we need to be really proactive about.
And did you oppose Line 5?
You know, I don't think of it in such a basic way as I'm in favor or oppose. I mean, it's a pipeline. So do I oppose pipelines generally? You know, they serve a critical purpose as so long as we rely on petroleum. What I support is tribal sovereignty. And so I back the tribes on their positions. You know, they've tried to kick Enbridge out of their reservation. Enbridge is still trespassing. There's a reroute that's proposed that fundamentally doesn't solve the problem, because when we recognize treaty rights aren't just about on and off reservation, it's about ceded territory, which is the whole northern lands. And so we have to be extremely thoughtful about the impact of a pipeline in ceded territory that's right on the banks of Lake Superior and in the watershed.
You also ran on another issue that I think some Democrats who succeeded also elevated, and that's the issue of public schools. Did that resonate when you were knocking on doors?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure it did for every representative, every candidate in every district, no matter Democrat or Republican. I mean, public schools are the heart of communities. People know it. And so every door I knocked, you know, that was odds of that being the top concern, you know, at least half of the doors I knocked, that was what came to mind. And it's not just about, you know, we've got to take care of kids and teachers. It's also when the legislature fails in its job, schools have to go to referendum and property taxes go up. And so property taxes affect every property owner. And this is something that, you know, the effects of failing to solve this problem are widespread.
Now, are you going to work on that issue in the assembly? And do you think, even though Republicans still have the majority in both halves of the legislature, is it possible that we'll be able to get our public schools more money?
Definitely going to work on it. Maybe you saw Jill Enderle yesterday proposed a huge budget increase for public schools. It's awesome. It's transformational. It's the kind of changes that we need. Importantly, that huge budget increase is also a strategy to keep property taxes down. People need to recognize that. Over 100 school districts went to referendum last year. I mean, just on this ballot on November 5th, because we're in crisis. And so we need solutions. And will Republicans work on it? I mean, they absolutely should. I can't speak for them, of course. I'm open to working with anybody. But this is affecting every single property owner. And Republicans are responsible for raising people's property taxes. Like, people need to realize that, that Republicans are raising property taxes because we're not fixing our public school funding. The state needs to step in and do more. Dr. Jill Enderle has a plan for that. And I'm hoping people come to that with an open mind and recognize that when there's a crisis and you're a lawmaker, you're responsible for solving that problem.
And about three quarters of those referendums passed. I mean, people want to support their public schools. But yes, the state, especially from Scott Walker's day, you know, they took an axe to public school budgets. And as a consequence, we've had to go to referendum in one community after another. And yes, it raises the property taxes. So that's the irony of it all. Republicans are supposed to be against raising people's taxes and de facto raise people's taxes because they wouldn't do the job that people wanted to see done, which is, you know, support our public schools. It's been outrageous, really. Angela Stroud, give our listeners some sense of who you are. Give us your background.
Sure. So I'm a sociologist by training, which means that I've spent my career trying to understand how and why the world works the way that it does and looking for solutions to social problems. I've done that as a professor at Northland College for the last 12 years. That's how I found my way to this incredible community. And you know, being a sociologist, a lot of times people don't really understand what that is. But it's an approach to seeing the world that recognizes, A, we're all in this together, inevitably. B, that's our source of strength. C, my research method is about listening to people and trying to understand their perspective and recognizing we have to find a way forward together. My background research area has been on guns, gun violence, and gun culture. And I've loved that work in part because I came to it with an open mind and realized, you know, I don't know the answer to all problems, but I know that the way forward is to listen to each other and then to use pragmatic solutions that recognize people's rights and culture and all kinds of things. And so, you know, my background has been, I've realized increasingly, perfect training for this job. And so I'm just super excited to get to work.
But it's quite a jump from academia into the political arena. What made you decide to take that leap?
Well, people probably know, you know, Northland was kind of shaky, like lots of higher ed was struggling last year. And so because of that, for the first time, I needed to think about, well, if I had to get a different job, what would I do? And I looked up and saw these beautiful maps, this beautiful district. And I was, you know, I always knew that I might want to try politics at some point. When you study the social world, time and time again, law, budgets, governance are so central not only to the problems we have, but the solutions that might be possible. And so I've always, you know, I worked on understanding that. And I love people. I love also solving problems. You know, I'm the type, like, whenever there's an issue, I run toward it because I'm like, how can I help? And so when we think about our government, our democracy, there are problems and I want to help.
What is the status of Northland College now? Are they coming through this crisis or?
We're hanging on. I mean, so long as we're open, we have a chance. And so they're open, there's commitments to staying open. So it looks like there's a future.
You know, here at Civit Media, we believe in listening to people. So when you mentioned how important that was to you, really resonates with me. And that includes listening to people who don't agree with us politically. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for folks right now on the progressive side who feel beat up because of the election and also may tend, some of us anyway, to make broad generalizations about the folks who voted for Trump, which just aren't true in the main. So yeah. How do you suggest we have conversations with people who voted for Trump?
You know, I think for some of us who think, and I think know that Trump is a threat to democracy, we follow different media and we pay attention to different evidence. And so we assume that other people are consuming that same media and then making a decision about whether to vote for Trump or not, given that information. And that's just not the case. A lot of people who vote for Trump either are not consuming a lot of political media. Frankly, I mean, why would they? You know, it's kind of a clown show and a disaster. They're focused on other things like working and raising their families or taking care of their parents. And so I met a lot of people on the campaign trail who just don't follow politics. They weren't even really that aware of anything. January 6th, threats to democracy. All they know is their lives are harder now than it was 4 years ago. I mean, it really is that basic thing that people talk about. And so my main piece of advice is we really can't assume anything about people based on who they voted for. I think we have to come with a position of curiosity, being willing to listen and being open. That's super hard when you're stressed by the outcome and you're really worried about the future. But empathy, listening, and recognizing we are all in this together, no matter who people voted for. And you know, whenever you're engaging with people, listen, listen, listen. Listen more than you talk.
Yeah, great advice. You also mentioned people are in different political media universes, which I think is so true. How do we get people outside of their media silos?
I think that's maybe the toughest one, but I know face-to-face interactions, actual in real life community is very important because it really disrupts what we all, you know, consume and then think about the other. I'd love if we all could engage with fact-checked news sources, but can't force people to do that. And so, you know, that's a tricky one. And I don't have all the answers there, that's for sure.
But I think you hit the right answer, the one that I was circling here in my little notepad, listening to each other, face-to-face interactions, having those conversations, not just intermittently, but, you know, over the long term, no name calling, no judging, you know, try to bring people over who are in your little social circle or your broader social circle or your religious circle. Somehow we need to connect people and have civil conversations with people and start bringing people around. Angela Stroud, winner of the 73rd Assembly seat, thanks for being my guest and good luck down in Madison.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We'll be right back with Harvey K.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Time to lace up those skates with 105.5 WIRI and your Wisconsin Rapids River Kings. Join us for every home game this season. Take the pride in your team like they do each other. As Coach Paul says,
you got to have everybody buying in and you got to be playing for the logo.
Hear insights from Coach on Playmakers Mondays at 5:30 on WFHR and join us for every home game on 105.5 WIRI. Support the boys of winter as they build hockey up and down the river. Game on!
Dynamite!
Do you catch yourself quoting TV shows like that? It could win you a free meal and make you our next star of the day with Culver's. Join the morning show on WFHR every Friday.
What you talking about, Willis?
My name's James, and I'm telling people every Friday we'll play a theme song or a quote from a movie.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give it.
You call 424-2600, give the correct answer, and you'll win a family pack from our Wisconsin Rapids Culver's.
To the Batmobile.
Join the morning show every Friday for Culver's Star of the Day.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Bringing a house of pain.
Backside pressure, down he goes. Inside the 30-yard line.
To a game day near you.
Picked off by Wisconsin, and the Badgers win it.
That's how you create a program. That's how you create a team.
Join us Saturday. The Badgers take on Big Ten newcomer Oregon. Our coverage begins at 4:30 on your home for Wisconsin football.
Here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR.
The Todd Alba Show.
Brady joining us live via phone.
I tell the guys before every game, and honestly try to do it before every practice, challenge is going to come. This team is not just going to show up and allow us to walk all over them and win. Really what matters is how are we going to respond to that? Man, if you can adapt and use it as a learning opportunity, it's going to set you up to go accomplish darn near anything you want to.
I think there are a lot of people that need to hear that message today.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Stonecutters made them
from stone. Hey, Matt Rothschild with you for the rest of this hour. Welcome back to Civic Media Mornings. Pat Kreitlow's off this week. He'll be back Monday with his Up North News Radio. Before I forget, I want to apologize once more for the technical difficulties we had a little bit earlier, and thanks for bearing with us. Really appreciate it. And I want to thank our engineer, Greg Bach, who's been working super hard to solve all of the technological problems this morning. Thanks, Greg. I do want to thank my guests, Angela Stroud, who was just on, Ahmad Rivera-Wagner, both of them going to the assembly for the first time, which is really exciting. Matt Voss from the museum, art museum up in Wausau, and Harvey Kay, who's with me again. Harvey Kay is an emeritus professor at UW Green Bay, the author of the American Radical, Thomas Paine and the Promise of America, and the Fight for the Four Freedoms. Thanks for hanging on, Harvey. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
You know, at the highest level, when I'm looking at things, it seems to me that capitalism is devouring our democracy. It's devouring our democracy because it's not delivering the goods. Neoliberalism wasn't delivering the goods, as you pointed out in the last half hour. And so people are susceptible to anyone who comes around and acts like he's going to fix everything, which is, of course, Donald Trump's mantra. Capitalism also is devouring democracy because the super rich are buying our politicians. I mean, Elon Musk can throw, you know, unknown millions upon millions into a race and help Donald Trump win. I mean, this fascism, if you look at it historically and currently, is and can be an outgrowth of capitalism. And I think that's one of the things we're looking at right now, don't you, Harvey?
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, as a sidebar to what you just said, the next time a Democratic candidate for president stands before us and says, "I am a capitalist," I think I'm going to explode.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy that. I also didn't enjoy when she bragged about having the most lethal fighting force in the world. That gave me the creeps a little bit too.
Yeah, that was, yeah, you know, you speak softly and carry a big stick was Teddy Roosevelt, which is to say, if you're going to have it, don't necessarily threaten other people with it.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of problems she had to deal. I mean, Gaza was a problem, too. I mean, let's face it. It turned off the most likely enthusiastic young organizers that the Democratic Party usually relies on. And they were just turned off by the horrible genocide in Gaza and by the inability of the Biden administration to restrain Netanyahu in any meaningful way.
Well, we're all going to discover. You probably saw that Mike Huckabee is the appointee in waiting.
Yeah, new ambassador to Israel.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, if we thought it was horrific before, I just can't imagine what's going to happen now. I mean, it was hard to imagine the previous year. So,
the question before us is, what do we do right now, Harvey? What do we do as progressives here on the Civic Media Radio Network? What do we do if you're affiliated with the Democratic Party? How do we regroup?
Well, for a start, I think it's imperative that any progressive groups around contact whatever Democratic federal office holders they can. I'm thinking especially in the case like Mark Pocan and Tammy Baldwin, and make it clear to them that there needs to be a change in leadership in the congressional delegations in Congress. I mean, to have Schumer continue to lead the Senate and Jeffries the House after we've suffered this kind of debacle, it seems just completely off the wall to me. So we definitely need new leadership in both cases. And one would hope that we'd see something more significant from the congressional, or they call them the progressive caucus of the Democratic Party in Congress. I mean, they just literally went with Biden. I don't know of any deals they made just to endorse him to begin with, as you know, when he decided he was going to run in spite of his age and health. So it's striking to me that these leaders, Schumer and Jeffries, are planning on staying on. And I think it's important for Baldwin and Pocan and others to hear from progressives that it's time for them to go. I'm not saying they had to resign their seats in the House or the Senate, but it really is the case we need new leadership. And I'm not necessarily calling for youngsters to take over, but it is true that there are good progressives who would do a hell of a good job leading. And then that's first. But the other thing is that the Democrats in Congress, even if they can't win, they have to fight not only against what's coming down, they also need to propose over and over again progressive social democratic legislation. Social democratic legislation that would both fight inequality and also empower working people to be a part of that fight. I mean, yeah, they're not going to get it through Congress, but they've got to make a fight. They've got to reveal to the world that they can be the party of FDR. They can be the party of Robert Wagner. They can be the party, though he never joined the party, but the party of young Bob La Follette here in who's lined up with the Democrats in the 30s. I mean, it's that kind of thing that we must see from the Democrats if we're going to recover at all. And then, you know, they should be laying out an agenda, a platform, and a vision, to my mind, a social democratic vision for that those moments where they may well return to power in some form.
But the problem is the mainstream Democrats now have the knives out for, of all people, Bernie Sanders and AOC.
Yeah. Talk about absurd, right? Talk about absurd. And by the way, one more thing, because I know we're running out of time. Quickly. It is imperative that labor not merely be organizing, which is an imperative to begin with. They must meet the Democrats and say, no more. We're not going to put up with this any longer. You've got to do what's right. And they themselves should take on the progressive vision that might impress the Democrats.
Right. Thank you, Harvey Kaye, and thank you for listening. I'll be back tomorrow on Civic Media Mornings. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in for Pat Kreidlow.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for the Todd Allball Show.
Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we talk to Angela Lang from Block, Black Leaders Organizing Communities. A little weather and wine with Brittany Merlot in hour number two. I hope you'll join us.
Mattenair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Civic Media, Wisconsin's source for real news and great conversation, offers podcasts of all of our daily shows online and on demand. Simply go to civicmedia.us, click on Daily Shows, and choose the podcast that you want to download. Shows are updated daily, or you can save them and listen all at once. Our podcasts are sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. You are an organ donor, right? Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Learn more at heroicdeed.com.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at